Joining me in this episode of the Conscious Diva podcast is Dr. Sweta Vikram. Sweta is an Ayurvedic doctor and international speaker. She has written multiple award-winning books and is a trusted source on health and wellness, frequently appearing on NBC. Today, we are chatting about her latest book, The Loss That Binds Us. It is the first book to use the principles of Ayurveda to heal grief. Sweta shares how Ayurveda and grief work together. She explains what grief is and how it shows up differently for everyone, which has a lot to do with our Ayurvedic constitution. In other words, our predisposed characteristics. Her book offers 108 practical tips to help navigate the multitude of emotions brought on by loss, as well as helping you identify what you are experiencing so you can acknowledge, understand, and accept. This book is an invaluable resource for anyone navigating the challenging journey of healing after the loss of a loved one, job loss, or a breakup. I certainly learned a lot, especially how Ayurveda comes into play with grief. I hope you enjoy this episode on conscious grieving. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's so lovely to meet you. So let's talk about your new book. Can you please hold it up again?
Of course.
Lovely. Immediately, I really resonated with The Loss That Binds Us. I thought, wow, this is an interesting book. What I liked about it was the fact that you have come at it from the Ayurvedic perspective, which I don't think has been done before. Am I right to think that?
That's fair to say. Yeah, very much so.
So I thought, you know, it would be great if you could just explain a little bit about Ayurveda, just for people who may not be familiar with the concepts of Ayurveda. And I'll ask you some other questions around that. So what is Ayurveda and what is its purpose?
So it's this ancient wisdom that stems from India. So it's debatable. Some say 10,000 year old, I'll stick to 5,000 years because that's what my teachers say. And it feels like a good cozy number. It's the ancient, it's not just a science of healing. It's a living science. Ayu is life, Veda is science. So it's the science of life. So it's the science of how we show up, how we are a miniature of nature and how our diet and lifestyle impacts who we are. And it's practiced differently in the United States compared to India. Here, it's more about maintenance. You know, it's complementary. But in India, it's and like I've trained in Ayurvedic hospitals, and it's a full-fledged hospital. Like they have ER, you know, in my training, there was a psychology department and pediatrics and surgery. And it's just brilliant. So the simplest way for me to describe it, it's the science of life, and it honors or the circadian rhythm also honors Ayurveda, and Ayurveda recognizes the circadian rhythm. So we are a miniature of nature. And if we follow the rhythm of nature, then all likelihood we'll have health and well-being on our side. Because right now, the world that we live in, we are pushing against our internal system. We're pushing against Mother Nature. We're pushing against everything because that type A living, that hustle culture, the go, 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 is making people sick. Like when you look at animals and, you know, you look at birds and they know at sundown they need to go home. Bears hibernate over winters. We don't do any of that. And people are very proud of, oh, I get my second wind at 10 p.m., 11 p.m. Yes. And that's where, in many ways, diseases start because we're going against. So again, coming back to that, it honors the elemental system, so to speak. There are five elements. The combination of two makes a dosha. So what is a dosha? It's a constitution. Think of it as a DNA. So I'll talk about the three doshas. There is Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And, you know, people are different combinations. There are few people who are tri-doshic, which is a combination of all three. Most of us are dual doshic.
I'm Pitta Vata.
You're Pitta Vata? Nice. Yes. And there are few people who are monodoshic, right? So the idea is at the time of conception, the biological parents, in each of them, whichever dosha is like the main player, that's the combination you get. So let's just, if the mom is high kapha and the dad is high pitta, because we have imbalances too, right? So at the time of conception, so the child would be either pitta kapha or kapha pitta, depending on. So it's like, think of it as your DNA. So the vikruti is the imbalance. And so disease have, this is a constitution. Like you said, your pitta vata. This is where you need to be. But we start to fall sick when we get away from where we need to. This is called prakriti, a constitution. And when we get into imbalance, it's called vikriti. And diseases start from an Ayurvedic perspective when we start going into imbalance.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because you can actually, once you've learned or you've gone to see a practitioner and they've informed you and educated you on Ayurveda and the systems and how it affects the body, you can actually start to tune into that and feel, you know, the Agni, the fire, how certain foods affect you, how certain seasons may affect you as well, and the
Absolutely.
triggers, right, with all of these things too. So it's so fascinating. It's such an incredible way. So then expand now, move into like where does grief play in this? Because with the understanding of the different constitutions, the different doshas, how then can something like grief, which is so vast and affects everybody so differently, where does Ayurveda come in with to this or come into play?
I love this question so much because I feel, you know, when we grief turns everyone into a monster, the scale might differ, you know, the size of the monstrosity might differ, but it's just so hard hitting that we all become someone we don't recognize. And when you have Ayurveda by your side, instead of being judgmental, you're being more compassionate. And you know, I loved what you said about Agni because I wanted to touch upon that before going into the grief. So Agni is the digestive fire, right? And so in Ayurveda, that's not what you eat, what you digest that matters most. So it's the conversations, it's the environment, it's the emotions and the food. So even with grief, that really matters. You know, you see some people, they're extremely anxious around crisis, around grief. There's some people who are angry. Hello, pithas. Anxiety is more a vata imbalance. And there's some people who are demotivated, excessively attached, and they hold on to emotions and materialism. There's the imbalance of kapha. So that's one way of looking at it, like in a home where death has occurred, or in a home where people are grieving the loss of an opportunity, job, whatever have you, you know, because grief is not just, it's a I think a response to any kind of loss. But specific to this book, it's because it's about my dad. So, you know, you look at these personalities and I realize there's just compassion. Instead of saying, why is this person like so anxious? Why do they have a panic attack? Because, like I said, grief turns us all into monsters. Our compassion level goes down in some ways. Like, we want people to behave the way we behave. Or then there are some people who are like, I'm really good in crisis management, but because I'm a pitta. So it's good to acknowledge what I have, but at the same time, if you're out of balance, that's the person who has a sharp tongue. You know, that's the person who might get a heartburn. So it shows up in different ways. And a kapha person would be like, they just can't get out of that grief. So all of these doshas have.
Maybe just quickly expand on why might a kapha person not be able to get out of the grief? Because I know that body type is quite specific as well.
Right. So yeah, that's what I was getting. Like all of these doshas have 10 pairs of opposite qualities, right? So one of the qualities of kapha is the job is lubrication, stability. So your kaphas in balance are your 3 AM friends. You call them, they don't judge you. They are the ones you could curate Christmas parties and like take care of everyone in the family. Nothing in excess is good. But when kaphas get out of balance, that's when they get excessively attached. There is a heaviness, there is stagnation, there is hoarding. And by hoarding, I don't just mean materialism, it's also emotions. Like kaphas have an elephant's memory. So imagine there's grief and somebody hurts you and then you're attached to that. Like, how do you get out of that? So while vatas have this lightness where they can't sit still because grief will just make them more mobile in their mind and in the bodies, kaphas, because of the opposing qualities of heaviness. And so we are also in kapha season right now. Late winter to early spring is kapha season. So if you notice, this is when people have congestion. They have mucus, they have water retention, there's bloat, everything is heavy. Kapha is made up of earth and water. Things are starting to melt right now, but they melt and they get stagnated because it's not pitta, it's not summer season. So it's beautiful when you look at Mother Nature where things are collecting. This is the time emotions are collecting, people tend to gain weight, get bloated. All emotions stir up like crazy right now. It's not during peak winter because, you know, we're eating those hearty foods that are stabilizing us. It's now. So that's the thing with kaphas. But the other way of looking at it is there are different kind of pittas. There are five kinds of pittas, sub-doshas. There are five kind of sub-doshas of kapha as well. And in Ayurveda, we say heart and mind, you know, it's a seat of consciousness. So there's one pitta called Sadak pitta, which needs to be balanced. Because if not, pittas have a tendency out of balance to become very bitter, the anger. So, you know, when in Western medicine or psychology, we say there are five stages to grief, anger would be a pitta thing. Like, I'll give you an example. My mom would tell us about this woman she knew who decades after her father had died, had turned her house into a museum. His clothes, his shoes, everything was in display. And she just couldn't get back to her marriage. She couldn't get back to her life like that. So to me, in my head, instead of judging, I'm like, oh, that's kapha imbalance. If only she'd worked with an Ayurvedic doctor. So this is where it feels like, so kapha and grief have the same qualities of being heavy and sticky. Grief doesn't feel light and frivolous. It's not vata. Grief is not focused. It's not pitta. There is this stickiness, which is kapha season, kapha quality. When you think of pizza dough, right? You make earth, bring earth and water, which is flour and water, and it becomes sticky. Mucus is sticky.
Yes.
So grief is sticky. So we need to apply opposite in Ayurveda, unlike homeopathy. The belief is like increases like. So we need to do everything which is not serving you, apply opposite qualities. So if there's a person with kapha imbalance going through grief, we need to apply mobility, which is like whether you like it or not, move every day. Stop eating ice cream. Stop doing heavy foods. You know, go out and connect with people. Do heated yoga asana. So you want that mobility, that heat, that warmth.
We're both living in the United States. So in the Western world, Ayurveda is as you just explained, in India, it's so much, they really take it very seriously. It's a part of life. It's not just a life science, but it's a way to apply, really looking internally as well as externally. Absolutely everything is affects you. And this is the way that they view life through this lens. But here in the West, Ayurveda is almost seen kind of complementary or more like a sort of an alternative wellness application, or, you know, I don't want to say as frivolous as getting a massage, but it's not taken, it's not viewed as a serious way of living, which is a tragedy, because if people understood the tools of Ayurveda, how we can assess ourselves in situations, then we would truly handle things, you know, with grace, more elegantly, because we would understand, as you've just explained with the kapha constitution, this is how that person might be experiencing things from a very sticky perspective. And so can you just talk about the other two as well? Because I think it's so important to know. And if people are listening, they may go, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I was a kapha type. I just lost my job, or I just lost a loved one, or, you know, broke up from a relationship, or whatever happened, or a pet died, you know, and I'm feeling this heaviness. And I, gosh, it's so good to know that that's because of the dosha, the constitution that I am. So how might a pitta person and a vata person experience grief?
And I also want to like sort of clarify one thing, like, so these are imbalances. If a kapha person is in balance, they will not experience these things.
Thank you.
Anybody could get into imbalance. Right now it's kapha season. So even a vata and a pitta person could, right? But a kapha person is just more vulnerable. Like comes summer, I have to be super careful because I'm high pitta, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I don't get into kapha imbalance or vata imbalance, but like pitta can be my strength, but also my weak point. So it's something that everyone who's listening, and just keep that in mind. So with pittas, because they are doers, you know, they, despite a tragedy, a crisis, they will get stuff done. That's just their innate trait. But when they're out of balance, they're the ones who get the burnout. So people who don't deal with the grief and just pour themselves into work. And 2 years later, I know somebody who 4 years later started grieving their parents' demise, because it was just, start this, go to school, do this. It's their survival mechanism. And again, because this person doesn't practice Ayurveda, that's a way of surviving. And when we started to work together, finally had a meltdown over Christmas, like, oh, this is the time when all that tragedy hit. So pittas have a tendency to burn out, overwork themselves. In some cases, addictive habits, like drinking too much. Mm-hmm. It might be substance abuse, right? Or too much of perfection, judgment, being judgmental and critical, self and that of others. For vatas, there is a lightness, right? So in balance, they're clairvoyant, spiritual, very creative. But when they are out of balance, for them, grief is not being able to shut their mind. The fear, the insecurity, they're the people who you wake up in the middle of the night and will be checking if you're breathing. Because, you know, that anxiety of, will I lose a loved one again? And I've had clients who've done that. And I was like, oh, that is such a vata imbalance. Because anxiety creeps in, twitching might creep in, constipation might creep in, because vata is dry. So it's drying up your nerves, it's drying up your gut. So all of that dryness, and so the inability to sit. So one of the things I recommend for vatas is get Shirodhara, which is, you know, warm oil. Don't do this at home, please. Go to an Ayurvedic practitioner and let them assess if this is the best thing for you. But one of the things that I'd recommend for my clients, because, you know, I know what's going on with them, is Shirodhara. It's pouring of warm oil on the third eye. They go to a Ayurvedic center, and it really nourishes the nervous system, the mind, and it brings Vata down.
I love
so there's
that.
so many
It's
tools,
the best
right?
experience. I've done it a few times in India. Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
it's incredible. And people forget that grief, like any other emotion, is also a very big part of our lives. The entire world is grieving for something or the other. And when we don't heal ourselves, we pour our brokenness into our families, our communities, into the world. And to me, that makes the world much more unsafe, because if we haven't taken care of us, we're working from a place of depletion instead of fulfillment.
Yes, yeah, 100%. And so, you know, you said before you wrote this book. I know it was beautiful. And you also, that story that you just shared of the woman who turned her home into a museum is in your book. But your father inspired this book. And
yes.
You say, of course, it's sad that he's no longer in physical form to share your life with you. But at the same time, interestingly, had he not passed away, would this book have come into being?
We'll never know. But I don't, you know, like when people ask me what inspires you to write any book, I was like, a topic finds me. I don't chase it. So if I'm trying to seek answers, I write it. Or if something like really takes space in my heart and my mind, I feel like it needs to be written. And it's very interesting. So April 2nd was the book release event. And, you know, typically, like when my novel came out, Lululemon had sponsored the event. So there was like a big thing happening. This time I wanted to do the book release event at a senior living center.
Wow.
I was like, you know, they need this more than I think everybody needs a hug and a conversation around their grief being addressed. But I know, you know, and my dad was in his 70s. So he wasn't like young, but he wasn't old. But I realized with age, people start to feel invisible. And I noticed that with his friends. And I noticed that with my in-laws, like that, you know, visibility is such a thing. So I was like, what better way to give back to the community than celebrate this book? And they were so open to the idea of practicing breath work, me teaching a grief workshop. It was such a humble reminder, because, you know, when we look at the elderly, we're just looking at them at the end. We forget they have their stories, they have their life. I met someone who worked in publishing, met someone who used to be a lawyer. So it was so incredible for them and for me both to meet them as like someone who had this incredible career, you know, but then at no stage, they might be decades apart, but grief brought us together. You know, stories brought us together. So I just feel like this, my dad would always say, we need to normalize conversations around grief, because he and I would talk and I'm like, you don't talk about the people who mattered so much. So you're not the type of person who lives in denial. So somewhere that's sitting as armor or toxins in your body. So we would often talk about that.
So explain just what armor is. I know you said it's a toxin, but how does it manifest in the body, or how can it manifest in the body?
Right. So going back to the roots of Ayurveda, digestive fire is Agni, which helps us transform information, food, all of that, right? Any of the stuff which doesn't get digested, which is not processed. So let's, you know, big thing would be gut health issues, right? Where people have malabsorption or they develop allergies or intolerance.
And these are very common Western things, right? These are
very
common Western things. Yeah.
Super common Western things. But ama could also be in the mind. And Ayurveda believes most diseases start from the mind. So ama meaning toxins, like so repressed emotions create diseases. Again, an Ayurvedic philosophy, right? So that ama doesn't just have to be in the gut. We also know 80% of your serotonin, your happy hormones are produced in the gut. So there is a brain-gut connection. But also ama starts from the mind. So the people who constantly think negatively, they're creating those, not just the samskaras, not just the circle of life, not just the karma. You don't have to believe in any of that. But if we think negative, that's the energy we put into the world, right? So it's creating those toxins. And those toxins flow through our blood. They come to different places. And in Ayurveda, there's a word called Kavagunya, which is, it's a Sanskrit word for weakness. So it goes to that spot, which has, so why is it that someone says, I have pain here? Or it's this one joint, or it's this one part of the body. That's a weak spot. So the idea is the brighter our Agni, you know, there's some people you meet and they have like this aura about them. They're illuminating, right? And it's that Agni, which is really working at like
maximum.
Like it's that brilliant thing. Like, you know, it's like there's an internal generator of something. So and it's not something that we do occasionally. Like meditation helps with mental armor detox, right? How we eat, how we live, that's on a physical, cellular, spiritual, on every level. So it has to be a combination of efforts. And it coming back to the topic of grief, like grief will create armor, right? It's not a natural situation. It's loss, it's heartache.
Yes. And
How
it's
do you?
often shocking. It's often in, like, regardless of whether somebody's been terminally ill and you've had months or, some amount of time to spend with a loved one, I would almost say that's almost a blessing in a sense, because it wasn't a shock. There was terrible news that was delivered that was a shock. Person's health deteriorated rapidly. That's awful. But when someone dies or is taken from you, or you're suddenly fired, or someone, you find out someone's cheating on you, you break up, or your animal suddenly dies, there, that's a shock because it was completely unexpected. So there, that immediately your mind goes to this, you freak out, right?
You do freak out, and again, like the doshas in imbalance will start to like scream at you. If you're Pitta, you'll get angry, like why my family? Why couldn't that person go through this, right? If you're Vata, you're just like, I need somebody to hold my hand. I have no idea what's happening. And if you're Kapha, you just shut down and you realize, like, you know, having been through this just 10, 11 months ago, I noticed everyone in the room how they were responding. So on, and then I checked in with myself, how am I responding? Like, is Pitta getting too out of control, or is it like just being a doer, taking charge of things, getting stuff done? So I think it just brings, and I keep bringing it back to like that conversation around compassion. It's so important to look at grief through the Ayurvedic lens, because then you're not judging people. And also grief is so dependent on the relationship with that person that you shared, that opportunity, how much it meant to you, that friendship, how it changed you, all of that, right?
Yes. Well, okay, so let's talk about the 108 tips that you offer, because that's what your book ultimately is
Yes.
about, these 108 approaches to healing your
Right.
grief, which is really lovely. And
Thank you.
yeah, you're welcome. I mean, that's one of the reasons I was really drawn to your book. I thought, well, I don't, as I said in the beginning, I don't think anyone's written a book from the perspective of applying Ayurveda and how grief can really affect us as individuals and why. It
Right.
presents differently, but also these 108, applications, if you will, tools. And not all of them will apply to everybody, but I mean, you just
Right.
mentioned one, compassion. So can you just go through, firstly, why 108? What's the significance of 108? And I'm wearing a mala, by
Mala. Oh,
the
nice. Yeah, growing up in an Indian, and I say Hindu just because it's part of the culture, right? So in Hindu homes, like all the grandmothers have those malas with the japa mala, with the rosary beads, so to speak, and you know, they chant 108. In yoga, 108 is again an auspicious number. So the number 9 is considered auspicious across cultures, across religions. And for me, that 108 is a very important number, the 108 pilgrimage sites in Hinduism. And then when I started to look at other cultures, old world cultures, 108 seemed to be a very important number. And I'm like, it's coming from somewhere. I was so drawn to it. And the other thing I wanted to say was, when I started to write this book, I realized most books on grief, which are all so useful, are written from that place of when the person is on the other side. So even when they address the darkness, it's not as raw. So what I mean by that is, which is brilliant also, but I wanted somebody else to tell me, I wanted to slap somebody else when I was angry. Like I wanted to read that. And people go through that, you know, people go through so many emotions. And when I did that whole talk at the Senior Living Center, I was like, how many of you agree you have a dark side that grief shows you and you didn't even exist? And literally everybody raised their hand. I said, and that was the same thing with me. And when you acknowledge it, it leaves you. If you start to, because it's no one's fault. The world we live in likes only highlighted reels of your life. It has to be all positive, all love, and this toxic positivity. We can have a positive mindset if we acknowledge the wrong that has happened, the injustice that has happened, and then we apply techniques and tactics to get to the other side. And so I wanted to talk about the different facets of grief, you know, and the different things it might bring up in you, so people don't feel alone. Because I felt alone. Everyone around me seemed to be so much more composed, but I'm like, I'm sure they're going through that. I'm just really honest as a person. I'm like, so I'll say what I feel because I don't know how else to navigate life. And so I'm like, this is for anyone and everyone who's going through those emotions and know that you're not alone and that one emotion doesn't make you a bad person. You know, I have a very dear friend who would always say, and we talked about this last year when my dad was still alive. She's like, you know, she lost both her parents before she got married. And she's like, every time she's at a Christmas dinner at her best friend's, she's very happy that they invite her. But at the same time, her heart aches because her friend has a full family and she doesn't. And I was like, I get that complexity. I'm happy for your happy families. And, you know, thank you for inviting me in because it's nice to get that hug from the older generation. But that emptiness still exists. And I wanted to talk about these real things. But then walking through the book, talking about the importance of emotional and mental well-being, the things we can do, but also towards the end, how do you honor them?
Yeah,
I don't think grief ever goes away. It, you know, it just the intensity reduces. But one thing might happen and it might trigger you again. So how do you prep yourself for that happens? How do you connect with others? For me, community work is the way I'm healing. You know, talking to others, helping others, teaching grief workshops, bringing in Ayurveda, helping people, you know, nourish their mental well-being. Everyone will have their own pathway, or donating to causes. So, or even, you know, like my dad's birthday, we actually did a birthday dinner for him. He used to be in New York for his birthday every year. And that was his plan. So I had he was going to be in New York, but, you know, he died 3 months to date before that. So we had his sister, my aunt, uncle, my cousins over. And, you know, we celebrated his birthday. We were like, you know, this is one way to honor him, to have all his favorite foods on the table. We've been doing that for my mom for 9 years. So it's just giving people a simple toolkit without being too cerebral or talking down at anyone.
And, you know, there's also a lot of culture, Eastern cultures particularly, that honor their deceased loved ones. I mean, you look at October in the West, of course, you know, it's Halloween, which isn't really about honoring. I mean, now I think there's much more of an ancestral movement of honoring. But in the East, there's always been the ghost month in Asia, you know, where they literally have these tents set up and there's huge banquets of actual food, but, you know, there'll be live humans performing some, you know, acting out a scene of some, we're singing, you know, a performance going on to a room of seemingly empty tables. But of course they're welcoming in the deceased, the loved ones, all the ancestors to come and participate in this feast and this show. And so I think having a dinner for your father, and he'd only been gone 3 months. I mean, it's a beautiful way. And it isn't, you know, I think in the West, we make fun of people who are still doing these things. You know, it's like, oh, you're still doing that? Or, you still feel sad for your cat that died? Or you still, you know, some people don't
like
have.
Like, there's a timeline for grief.
It's so sad. It's terrible. It's mean. It's like, have you ever experienced grief to actually understand how it feels for that person before just saying, oh, how you still feel that way 10 years on? You know, it's not. So I think you've got a lot of really lovely tips in here. Could you give some examples? I mean, I love the way that you have believe in the mystical, you know, and create an altar, not just in your home, but even in your office.
Yes, and I do that. So in fact, I opened, and the page that opened to was, it's okay to be sad. And so is it okay if I read a couple of lines from that?
Yes, because it is to give people permission to be sad is amazing.
Right. And, you know, you will know. And if you're unsure, talk to a mental health professional. Because, you know, there is the too dark versus the transient rock, right?
Yes, yes.
So this is tip number 21. It's okay to be sad. And I'll just read a bit of it just to give. So there's no way to explain to anyone who hasn't experienced a heartbreaking loss what losing a loved one feels like. This is exactly what you said. I felt sadness on a cellular level when my father died. His end meant that nothing was going to be the same anymore. No home in India, no parent alive. You might not always want to share your deepest feelings with anyone. It wasn't because I believed that no one would understand the depth of my loss. It's just that grief is and was mine. I didn't want to burden others. But I didn't banish the difficult emotions or replace them with a positive one because sadness felt difficult. Sadness is a part of grief, and it helps process life-altering events. Avoiding sadness can lead to toxic positivity, which takes you further away from your true healing and costs you your emotional well-being.
Thank you for reading that. I read your book, and when I read that, there's so much truth in that. passage that resonated with me. So
thank you for sharing that. My pleasure. And I know I was talking to someone who lost a sibling, and she was like, it's not just that grief transforms you, because when you change, your relationships change. Mm-hmm. So your lifelong friendships change, because we have these expectations of others. And some people think grief is a taboo, it's contagious.
Yes,
so she lost pretty much. I know. And it's not, it was like people stopped mingling with her because they kind of thought, oh, what if this happens to me? Like, it's not cold or cough. You're not going to catch it. But it's just the ignorance.
So it doesn't mean people in your life are going to die.
And if they're meant to, they will. And that is life. It's never all good. It's never all bad. But I think grief is very isolating, because you start to see the world for what it is, not what you thought it should be. So even your relationships, your friendships, because, you know, when we go through the motions of life, I think our generation, just the world we live in, it's go, 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 go. Grief forces you to pause. Because it's, you know, it almost incapacitates you. And then when you add distance and you pause, and I was like, oh, I was just doing this on a go-go mode. But if I don't call this person 5 times, they might not even check in on me, because I was the initiator of communication in this relationship. Or with the elderly, some of them might not even reach out because it scares them of their mortality. Mm. So it's very nuanced how people respond to grief. And it is very isolating.
And also guilt. Like, there's a lot of guilt that comes into grief as well. People feel guilty for feeling better, or they feel guilty, you know, just because maybe they didn't get to say goodbye to someone, or they had their last conversation ended badly with the person and then they never got a chance to heal that. So just, can you talk to this point a little bit?
Absolutely. It's so interesting you say that, because I have a friend of mine from a boarding school, and her mom died like maybe a year or two before mine, and we were hanging out together, and she was saying, you know, at least your last conversation with your mom, I told my mom I just learned a Persian dish and I wanted to cook that for her. I was going to see her in a few weeks, and she died very suddenly, very young. And so my friend was like, at least you had a happy conversation. You talked about feeding your mom. My conversation with my mom was like, she came back from a party and she was trying to say something. It was my friend's Friday morning. She was going to go into work. And she's like, mom, then why do you go to parties if you're going to bitch and gossip? And that night, our Friday night, this is in, and it was Saturday morning for her mom died of a heart attack. So for her, she always carries the guilt. What would I do to go back in time to change that? And I always remind her, and I want everyone who's listening to remember that you did the best that you could in that moment. You know, life doesn't like come with these prescriptions of at 158, this is what happens. And I told her, what a beautiful relationship with your mother. You could just tell her to shush it. Like, you didn't want to listen to the gossip. I said, I've done that with my parents. And I think what a beautiful relationship to have, where you don't have to be formal. You know, so it's walking away from that guilt. And it's up to us what we choose to focus on. That is something that I've learned. Either you can focus on only the negative. Mind is the only thing we can control in this world. Or you can focus on the beautiful memories. Sure, in the beginning, you might feel that way. But if we go down that ladder, there's so many things you can feel guilty about. Could we have taken them to a different hospital? Could we have gotten this? Could we have done this? When it's time, it's time. And you need to know honestly in your heart, like, did you do your best? Because I'm a big believer in not living with regret. So I used to go back to India every few months, you know, when my dad fell sick, and he never asked me to. And I think that was part of the reason. Like, he never expected that of us. And I wanted to be there. And I would travel to Mumbai. My dad was in Pune. I would travel to Mumbai, which is 3.5 hours away, every 3-4 days to see my in-laws. So in my heart, I did whatever I could. And I have no regrets, because I built so many beautiful memories with them. My father and my father-in-law, I have all these random pictures, which no one else in the family does. Because somewhere I was like, no, take pictures, because ultimately in life, that's what we are left with. So I think for people, it's very important to understand no one can get you out of this phase. You have to do the work. You can choose to be in that phase of I have this guilt and ignore everyone else in your current life, or say, this has happened. My heart hurts, and I'll hold space for that heart hurting. But you know what? And this is where it is, where if you've done your bit, the guilt doesn't take over that strongly. I also know people who had, you know, difficult relationships with their parents. And it's unfortunate, whatever be the reason. And once they pass away, then there is that guilt.
You know, you talk about believing in the mystical in your book. And yes. I wondered, you know, this is a way when people spiritual, have a spiritual practice, whatever that may be, whatever form that takes. And in those moments, we can say we're sorry or complete the conversation, tell that person we love them, right? So what's your belief in the mystical?
Oh, so much butterflies. So I have to say, when I was working on this book, there's a hotel in New York, you know, that had offered me a 2-day stay so I could like work on the book, which was beautiful. And it's in downtown Manhattan called Conrad. And the day I was checking out of the hotel, and it was, you know, it was really raw. And I didn't want to meet anyone. It was just me. One night my husband came over, he took me out to dinner. And then I was like, I just can't. And because there was just so many emotions, I needed to be alone to process them and not have to communicate that with. So I would keep going for long walks. And there were two monarch butterflies that kept following me. And one was prancing all over the place. The other was more stable. So I was like, the one prancing is my dad. The other is my father-in-law. Just letting me know that, you know, they're there looking over. As mm-hmm. recently as April 2nd, when, that morning, and then even before I left for the event, the lights in my bathroom were flickering, like flickering out of nowhere. So for me, you know, people are like, what's the proof? And I was like, what's not the proof? If it keeps me happy, I'm not, you know, my life doesn't depend on butterflies and lights flickering. But if it makes me feel good and it doesn't hurt others, it makes me feel connected. Like my mom loved jasmine, and the Indian jasmine, I'm sure you know, is called Mogra. Mm. And that fragrance is something else. Yeah. There have been times when I felt really low. All of a sudden, there's the smell of Mogra. I'm like, how do you explain in New York City subway, which smells of filth very often, there is my hands are smelling of Mogra. So wow. You know, it just makes me feel like I am not alone, despite being an adult orphan. So it's very comforting feeling for me. And I always tell people, like, you know, also I have a very pragmatic way of looking at life. If it's not taking you out of your daily life, and it's like if I'm now quit everything, my life, marriage, friends, family, and just chasing butterflies, that's one extreme, right? But if something like this happens, why not? And I have a friend, when her mom passed away, it was very interesting because she didn't believe in this. And I was like, look out for those signs, because, you know, that's the only way you feel like they haven't left you alone. Mm-hmm. She's like, and so she found a squirrel and a pigeon, and she's like, because if you, I'm talking to pigeons and squirrels on the street. And I was like, how did that make you feel? She's, you know what? Damn God.
I love it. Oh, that's great. So then, you know, how can we reclaim joy? Because you talk about this in your book as well, and the importance of honoring through memories of our loved ones. So how do we reclaim joy from recovering from grief?
Oh, I love that question again. It's interesting, yes, because Ayurveda is all about customized healing, right? So even emotional healing. So I'll give you an example, because my intention is to go reclaim joy tomorrow. So because my husband and I both lost our dads within 2 days of each other unexpectedly, we just didn't want to celebrate any festivals this year. So we've, you know, hosted dinners, we've done intimate gatherings, but we haven't attended any weddings, any big Christmas things. Even Thanksgiving was a family dinner with cousins, but you know, no big Diwali, Holi, or anything. Tomorrow, there is a Holi. This place is hosting a Holi gathering where you're not playing with colors, but you're making cards.
Oh.
And
in Manhattan? In
Queens.
In Queens?
Yeah, in Queens, oh. Yeah. Oh, and beautiful. In Flushing. So it's beautiful. And it's and then there'll be some Indian food. And then there are these performances. There's going to be a dance performance. So to me, that is a baby step, because in May is when we complete a year. And I asked my mom-in-law, like, I don't feel like celebrating anything. Is that okay with you? Because, you know, she's the only parent left alive, and I want to honor her feelings as well while honoring mine. And she said, you know, do what feels right to you. So I was like, I have her blessings. Rest, I don't care. So, but when this happened, even my husband was like, no, this sounds good. So tomorrow for us is about reclaiming joy. We didn't play with colors. We didn't celebrate Holi. We just went to a temple, you know, went to Ganesh Temple in Queens and just did a little prayer for other people who are suffering, for us and our deceased family members. But this will be like a little re-entry into the world of joy. So we've done little things like that, like spend time with baby nieces and say, remind yourself what is gone, but also there is also life going forward. And I know my dad or my father-in-law would be so heartbroken if they knew, like, we were just sulking. So you have to honor yourself, but in small ways. If going to the movies is reclaiming joy, eating their favorite foods. Like today we are going to get apple pie because the book came out and it was my dad's favorite dessert. So we're like, we'll share a slice of apple pie. So joy could mean different things in different ways, but like I really feel for events, gatherings, celebrations, you have to make that effort because it's so easy to be stuck in that kapha stagnation because it feels safe, right? It feels safe, but it's actually not safe. So it's recognizing that alarm that, yes, like I know my dad's birthday felt very intense. Then Thanksgiving was a little less intense. Diwali was a little less intense. Holi was very, obviously you miss them, but also acknowledging like I don't need to feel guilty that the intensity is less. I can just love them more instead of my heart aching for them more.
That's really beautiful. Now,
Thank you.
at the beginning, you're welcome. You very quickly you mentioned that, well, you just touched on the five stages of grief. Can you just explain what are those five stages of grief? Because they're different. Now, your 108 points are tools.
Yes.
These are ways to manage the grief, and you can honestly apply. You can you, you no matter what stage of grief you are at, you can just open your book and just kind of feel into what you need to read in that moment, how it can help you.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a Swiss psychiatrist, Elizabeth Ross, who came up with the five stages of grief: the denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And you know, she got a lot of pushback for this, but this was an exceptional case that she'd worked on for terminal patients. What I realized was grief, it doesn't follow an order. It's never linear. You could be stuck in one phase, like that person, that client who 4 years later finally accepted because she was stuck in anger for so long. 4 years later is when she accepted. So it's, you know, some people, they just shut down, know that everything is fine. They just pour themselves into work. Some people just get very angry. Right. For others, they said, no, I'll do this, so then this will work out. That's the bargaining aspect. The depression, that's very kapha, you know, and then there is the acceptance. And I feel this is where the yoga, Ayurveda, meditation, all of that works very handy because you realize universe, life and death are bigger than each one of us. And while we like to plan a lot of things, which is great, and Pitta, I totally approve that, we have very little control over anything in life. Like last year, this time I was in India, you know, I was with my dad, and we'd gone to the hometown. I had no plans to be there because I was there in December, but he was visiting the hometown where he and my mom lived. And it was on an instinct, I was like, I need to be there with him. And it was almost like I was there with him for a farewell goodbye to that city, to the people we went to, you know, we visited our old home where the new tenants lived. It was like I was part of his goodbye thing. And 6 weeks later, he was gone. So, and I feel like people should listen to the instincts a little bit more. Yes, pragmatism is important, but there's something called your intuition, your instincts. And my trip in April was just based on instincts, and I couldn't be more grateful.
Oh, it is totally. That was a gift. That was an amazing gift, and what a beautiful opportunity to spend that time with him. Like, that's just, yeah, I love that, and good on you for like listening
Thank you.
to your intuition, because so many people don't, and then we can miss these moments that, you know, perhaps hold just such love. Then this is another aspect of, you know, becoming, you know, believing in the mystical.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so, what's the best way somebody can support a person experiencing grief right now?
Just show up in the ways you know how to show up. Like, you know, grief has no timeline. And I understand adults are consumed with the day to day, but know that grief doesn't discriminate. We'll all be hit with it one day. So instead of giving suggestions, that's something like, oh, a very dear friend of mine, she would ask me this question, like, I don't know what to do, how to, and I would tell her, and this is what I love about you. You're not telling me how to navigate, but you're just asking me what can you do. And on some days, just you asking me that is enough for me. So ask people instead of assuming. You know, ask what they need. When for 3 months we had nonstop visitors, you know, somebody sent us Seamless cards, people brought us food. It was all very, so there are different ways, flowers, cards. I love just messages. You know, one of my best friends would stay up at night texting with me from 2 a.m. because I didn't want to sleep when, you know, the doctors told us, bring him home. He has a couple of days left. She would stay up with me in the morning because I didn't want to sleep. Whatever he was saying, I was making notes of it. I said, that's what I'll have left. And she would text with me. So support can look like different things on different people. But the one thing is just ask what they need. Because, you know, when you're grieving, your own needs change. you're looking at this person whom you didn't know existed. So you're almost like dealing with an alien inside of you. So I didn't even know what I needed. But when someone asked me, I was like, oh yeah. Okay, yeah, today I just want you to hold my hand. Tomorrow, don't even reach out. So just also be patient with them. And, you know, don't do check boxes. Yeah, I dropped off flowers, I'm done. Like, if you can't show up, just don't show up. But don't do check boxes because it raises expectations and leaves the person feeling really lonely.
Thank you. Do you have any other tips or is there anything else that you want to share about Ayurveda or grief?
You know, Ayurveda is very big on self-care. So that's something that I remind my clients, my friends, my family, to our listeners here today. And self-care doesn't have to be indulgent. It has to be built into your day-to-day so it's sustainable. So honoring what you need, communicating what you need. It could be just 20 minutes of walking barefoot on grass, right? Like, I live in the city, so I joke with my friends, like, barefoot, there might be pee somewhere, but I still will go hold a tree. You know, or if it's like 30 minutes of reading or doing that meditation practice, because it has to be built in your day to day. Because, you know, you can do that monthly dinners with your friends or go to a spa once a quarter. That's not sustainable. That ends, and what then? Then you're again looking for the next best thing. So honor yourself, rest. Ayurveda is again very big on rest and replenishment, you know, and like you have to honor your innate nature. It's very easy to say, oh, but. And no comparison in grief. Like in our home, with two of us grieving, and then my husband's family, my brother's family, my husband, like we sat down and I said to him, it's not just we are not comparing our grief, but if you start to talk about my dad, I won't say, oh, you are missing him. Imagine what I must feel. He was my father. No, no, no. There is space for everyone's grief. So for my dad's birthday, when my aunt and uncle were also over, and my uncle was trying to tell me, you know, like a man in his 70s, like fumbling around words. He didn't know what to do aside from hug me. And we were having this conversation and he was like, I really miss him so much. I was like, he was very loved. And, you know, you don't have to apologize for that. Like, we can both grieve for him. We can both love him. It's not just because he was my father. It's just there shouldn't be a hierarchy. There shouldn't be a comparison. And just, again, go back to compassion.
I love that. And I love what you just said with there's room for everyone's grief. That's so beautiful.
Thank you.
I think we just forget that, you know, or we never even remembered that there's space for everyone's grief, you know.
But yeah. Beautiful. And also one last thing is, you know, people are different kind of processors. Like, I'm an external processor, so I need to write. I talk about things. In our home, like, my husband is an internal processor. So also not judging how people are grieving. Oh, you don't cry. I've seen a lot of that in my practice. I'm mm-hmm. like, focus on you. If you can learn to love yourselves, you will know how to love others. Mm-hmm. When you're so focused on always correcting others, that means there is lack of self-love and self-worth.
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. Wonderful. Well, gosh, you know, I would love to come and do an Ayurvedic session with you one time. I love Ayurveda. It's so wonderful.
Absolutely. And I do virtually. So please do get in touch.
And I encourage other people to do so as well. If you've never experienced what it's like, and even just find out your dosha and how your body, your constitution may be affecting your life positively and negatively, I think, yeah, absolutely. Get in touch with Sweta. And so how can we get in touch with you? What is your website?
So it's my first name, last name.com. So Shweta Vikram, which is Sweta Vikram, Vikram.com. And all the information is on there. I do write a lot of articles and blog as well about Ayurveda, yoga, mindfulness. So, you know, it's a one-stop shop in that sense.
And how many books have you written? You've got quite a lot of books and all
this
different.
This is my 14th.
Okay, 14, because you've also got novels. I saw you've got, they're vast.
Right.
Well, this was awesome. This was really great. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Me too.
Yeah, it was so good. Thank you.
Thank
well,
you.
Have a lovely weekend. And I will.
You too.
Catch soon.
I'm going to go get that apple pie now.
Enjoy it.
Have a wonderful weekend.
And happy holidays.